According to a new study, more people than ever are living alone. Researchers found the percentage of households with just one person has more than doubled since 1960, from 13 to 27%. But why? Joining us now is Wendy Manning. She's the co-director of the National Center for Family and Marriage Research at Bowling Green State University. Wendy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, first, that's a big jump over, I think, a 50-year span. Was that surprising to you that the percentage of single-person households doubled?
It is surprising whenever we see large changes in family life, and so anything like this is surprising. It has been a steady increase. It wasn't suddenly a sudden increase just in the last 10 years. So we've seen sort of this steady rise. So it's not completely surprising, but it is quite a change.
Do we have a sense of whether this is a specifically geographic phenomenon, like more in cities or rural areas or one place but not another?
It's definitely more common in urban areas than in rural areas. And places like Manhattan, I think it's almost one in two households are single-person households. So it's certainly more common in urban areas.
And did I read now the second most common type of household is the single-person household after a married couple with or without children?
Yes. Yes, that is true. So we're seeing a growth in single-person households in recent years.
So I guess the big question is, why? Why are more of us living alone? And probably a huge question.
Yeah, that's a big question, and we don't really know exactly why. There's a few explanations. One is we've seen a giant increase in the age at marriage. We're at a historic high point in the United States. So for men, it's about age 29, the median age at first marriage, and for women, it's age 27. So there's a lot more of those young adult years that are spent outside of marriage, and those are potential years for living alone. We've also seen people aging alone. So we've seen people are living longer, they're healthier, and elderly really want to stay on their own. They don't want to move in with relatives or into an institution. So we've seen sort of a growth at both ends of the age spectrum.
And how about divorce for that older end of the age spectrum? Are we seeing more people live alone post-divorce now?
Definitely. And that's a big issue of great interest, because the baby boom generation is now entering into the age 65 and older. And they're the generation that's experienced some of the highest divorce rates. And so that certainly is playing a large role. And so we're seeing a lot more divorced older Americans.
I saw you quoted as saying something like that living solo is often ignored as an option when we study or talk about family life. Why do you think that is?
Well, we always seem to be interested in coupling and decoupling. So what is the process of getting married? Who's living together? What's the age at first marriage, things like that, or we're interested in what's going on with the divorce rate, and partly because these are pretty consequential when we're thinking about children. And so those are really, when we talk about American family life and you think about your future family life, those are the things you're usually thinking about, is children, marriage, widowhood, but you're really not seriously thinking about, well, how long am I going to spend living alone in my life? I just don't know if that's something that's resonating with young people today. I don't know if they're really considering that in their future. And then consequentially, in our studies, we're not focusing on that. So there's renewed attention to it. And it has some serious implications for elderly when we think about health implications as well as psychological well-being.
Is there any kind of stigma, do you think, for living alone? And maybe that's part of why we're not talking about it as much.
I don't know. I mean, other people have studied this more thoroughly, and it seems as if there isn't as much stigma as you might think. And just because people are living alone, it doesn't mean that they're lonely and that they're not socially connected. And some people say, with all of our technology and our ways of connecting socially through technology, that actually, if you're living alone, you could be more connected than ever before.
I may be reaching beyond the data here, but do you have a sense of how many of us are living alone because we chose to live alone, and how many of us are living alone because our lives just happened that way?
Right. I don't know the answer to that. I think that's really an interesting question, sort of living alone by choice versus living alone by some constraint.
By circumstance, I guess.
Circumstances, yeah.
I think I saw in your research that women are more likely to live alone. Why is that?
Well, some of that has to do with older ages, with the process of aging where the life expectancy of women is longer than men. So as you look out into the older ages, you just see an increasing share of women.
So do you have thoughts on how this rising number of people living alone might affect policy, I guess, how we research health, how we research families in this country, and what we do with this information, this knowledge that more of us are living alone?
I think it depends what age group we're thinking about. I think we're thinking about early adults. There's been quite a bit of attention to not living alone in terms of living with their parents, and we talk about boomerang children who leave home and they come back. And then what are the implications for then launching their careers and their family life? Might be quite different than we're thinking at the other end of the age spectrum. And we know that there's a lot of concerns about elderly as they move into the older age, what we call the old, and just in terms of their health and just having people to help them with their everyday needs. So we really have different policy concerns at either end of the spectrum. And it may not be so much living alone, especially for the elderly, but just being socially connected might be more important than if you're living alone or not.
I want to dig a little deeper at each end of the range spectrum. For the younger people, you mentioned the boomerang generation, people coming home to live with parents, and a lot of that seems like it's economically motivated. And I think you're working with 2010 census data. I don't know if you saw the impact of the 2008 economic meltdown, leading more young people to move in with parents and maybe a slight dip in those people living alone.
Right. So that's definitely, we've seen some changes in that, but we still see that it's, about half of what we call young adults are living at home. And so we didn't see like a giant rise and then a fall. But it's certainly the reasons why people are not leaving home or returning home have a lot to do with economics. And at all ages, in America, most people do prefer to live on their own. They don't necessarily want to live in multi-generational households. But that's not, that's not true across all groups. But the general consensus is people would prefer to live on their own. Young adults aren't really wanting to live with them.
Right. It's not, yay, I get to move back in with mom and dad.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting change in cultural norms. I mean, we think back to the, a TV show like The Waltons showing a Depression-era family with three, maybe four generations, and that was way more common. Is that a factor of changing economics? We never wanted to live in that family and we're happy to live alone? Or have we changed? Our attitudes about family have changed?
I think it could be a little bit of both. I mean, I think when you think about the Waltons, they were a farm family, and there were probably a lot of benefits to sharing a residence, and also there might not have been some of the same supports that we have today for the elderly in terms of Social Security and health insurance, and so that was one way that we used to care for our elderly because we didn't have the same social supports for them as we do today. And so people are able to live on their own where before they weren't. And I think within some cultures, it's very acceptable and part of their culture to share a home. We see multi-generational homes amongst all race and ethnic groups. So sometimes we need to remember this could be a preferred situation. And the older generations can provide childcare for the younger generations, and they can provide emotional and social support to one another. So it's not just a one-way street when we think about support across generations either.
We're talking with Wendy Manning about the rise of living alone, and we want to hear from you. Do you live alone? Was it a choice you made? You can give us some of the data here. Was it a choice that you made, or did some circumstance in your life change and it made you live alone whether you wanted to or not? What do you like or dislike about living alone? Maybe you used to live alone and now you don't. What do you miss about it, if anything? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. The number is 800-642-1234. Or send us an email, talk@WPR.org. We're talking about living alone and why single-person households are on the rise. The percentage of households with only one person in them doubled over a 50-year span. Over a quarter of households in the United States just have one person in them. We want to know, is that you? Was that you? Tell us your story of why you chose to live alone or ended up living alone and what you thought about it. You can join us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@WPR.org. Our guest is Wendy Manning with Bowling Green State University. Wendy, we talked more about younger people living alone earlier on. I wanted to focus a little more now on the older end of the spectrum. We've talked about this a lot on this show one way or another. So many families dealing with decisions. Can I keep my independence and still live alone? Can mom or dad live alone? What are the options? It seems like we as a society are struggling with what to do in these situations to make safe households, maybe without stairs, with transportation, that sort of thing. How far do we have to go to get there, do you think?
I'm not sure. I think these are really serious considerations in making decisions about whether to live alone. And we know that about 40% of women and I think about 19% of men over the age of 65 live alone. So this isn't a small group of folks. And as the baby boom ages, it's probably going to continue growing. But definitely... But just because they're living alone doesn't mean they don't maybe have connections and support that they need. And those who I think have economic resources are able to probably have folks come to their house and help with care. And that can make a big difference and allow them to stay in their home.
We'll go to our callers now. We have Mike with us in Johnson Creek. Mike, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I was living with my wife for 24 years before I lost her to cancer, and so I'm alone. I like being alone. I miss the family life at the same time, though.
Mike, I'm sorry for your loss. Have you found or are you finding ways to stay connected with people now that you're living alone?
Yes, I am. Yes, very much so. Very much.
What kind of things are you doing? Family, friends, church?
Lots of family. I was never on the internet before, so I'm on Facebook. So I've reconnected with a lot of old friends that way.
All right. Well, good. Way to make the best of it, I think, Mike. And thanks for calling and sharing your story. Wendy, that's the point you were making, I think, that alone isn't necessarily lonely or isolated.
Definitely. I think social media has and the internet have allowed people to really remain connected in all kinds of ways. So that's great to hear.
We'll go back to the phones now. We have Carol with us in Belleville. Carol, hi.
Hi.
So what's your story?
Well, my story was I'm 57. I divorced in 1991 and just never looked back. I thoroughly enjoy living alone. My children are grown. I have a lot of friends. I'm busy with work. I have a nonprofit. I don't have to compromise my life in any way with another person as far as how to spend my money, how to spend my time. And I, every once in a while, get a little lonely, but then I just call someone up and
make a plan.
Carol, that's great for you. I've found in the past when I've lived alone, I get a little batty living alone with too much time by myself. Maybe it's just a personality issue. Do you don't have that problem?
I don't have that problem because I'm somewhat of a I'm not a big socialite, but also I work a lot, so I'm around people all day long and on the computer all day long. So it's kind of nice to go home and just have everything quiet and just how I like it.
And the idea of living with people again sounds like would not be a fun one for you.
No, I think I'd not like that.
All right. Thank you, Carol, for sharing that story. And by the way, if you called and got full phone lines, a couple have opened up now at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Tell us your story about living alone, not living alone, your choice to do that, or the circumstance that put you there. So, Wendy, there definitely someone who maybe circumstance led her there, but she's happy and would never go back.
Right. And there's something that we call living alone together. And so some people, you know, for one reason or another, they're living alone and they are choosing, like the last caller, to continue living on their own. But it doesn't mean that they don't even have a relationship. So there's people who are essentially dating in these long-term committed relationships. And so they use this term living alone together. They each have their own homes. They don't want to really share a full-time residence together, and that way everyone can maintain their independence but yet still have the benefit of maybe a long-term caring relationship. And so I think that's something that we haven't come up with a category for this in our surveys when we're talking to people, and some people think about this while you're just dating, but it's a little bit different because you don't really, usually when you think about dating, you're moving towards maybe co-residing or living together, but maybe that's okay to not do that, to have a committed relationship where that's not the end goal.
Maybe this is judgy or something, but I'm wondering, is this saying something about our psychology? We're so narcissistic or like unable to compromise that we can't spend time in a building with another, or that much time in a building with another human? Is this the national psychology?
Or maybe to have a healthy relationship, you don't have to live together.
Right,
so, you know, like maybe the other side of the coin is maybe living together is a little overrated. And if you can afford to, then these separate circumstances, maybe you can actually have a healthier relationship. So,
then maybe there's a whole other conversation in that.
Yes.
We'll get back to our callers now. We have Sally on the line in Green Bay. Sally, hi there.
Hi there.
What's your story?
Well, I just wanted to comment. My husband died in kind of a freak accident about 5 years ago, and we have been married for 45 years very happily. I have gone directly from being at home under my father's supervision, if you will, to living with my husband. So I'd never lived independently. And while it was very hard to lose him and it was a huge adjustment, the one thing that I found was that I took tremendous pride in being able to do the things independently that I'd always counted on him to do. And things like, for example, insurance. You know, he was always in charge of insurance, so I had to learn about that. And silly things like the fuse box and killing spiders and catching critters and what have you. And so it was just—it was almost exhilarating, really, to find that there were so many things that I could learn how to do that I just never did before. So that was a positive side of it.
Well, Sally, I'm sorry for your loss, but congratulations on taking pride and meeting those challenges. What an interesting story, Wendy.
Yeah, I think that's excellent, and you hear that a lot, that it's not. That through a loss you can learn a lot about yourself and what it and if there's someone to take care of those things, then you're willing to let them do it. But when you have to do it on your own, you can. So I'm proud of her.
Maybe there's a lesson in cross training there for couples, though, to at least be familiar with all those other things. Back to the phones now with Jeannie in Friendship. Jeannie, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And I think I agree with your caller. I think she's very liberal and open-minded about living alone. I was married for 25 years. We separated for three. Then we divorced. I've been single and living alone ever since, and gosh, I love it. I don't have to compromise. I don't have to ask permission. I'm peaceful. I'm quiet. I just recently retired, and people ask me if I'm going to be bored, and all I can say is, absolutely not. If you're bored, you're boring. And so I'm not, and I love living alone. So thank you for this radio program. It makes me feel like there's more people like me out there who are enjoying it rather than feeling like we're the odd person.
Well, Jeannie, and I wanted to ask.
Any comments?
Hold on, Jeannie. Don't hang up yet. You mentioned that our guests saw this in an open-minded way. Do you encounter people who don't see it that way?
Yeah, the first thing that people want to say to you is, aren't you lonely? And I think, no, I'm not lonely. I have a very healthy social life. I like to be at home. I like to do things in my home. I like to, I have a dog and a cat, and I like to be quiet. I like to read. I live in the woods. I like to enjoy nature. I'm not lonely. I have so many friends, and I have a lot of family. I have no children, but and I will say that my husband was the love of my life. But unfortunately, due to alcoholism, we just didn't see eye to eye to live together anymore.
Okay.
It wasn't just going to work.
Thanks a lot for sharing your story, Jeannie. Well, I guess our take-home message here, Wendy, is Jeannie and people like her really aren't alone. There's a lot of people one way or another in her situation out there.
Yeah, I agree. They sound very connected, and I think there is a stereotype, and all of the callers are countering that stereotype, so that's great to hear.
Wendy, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure.
That's Wendy Manning. She's co-director of the National Center for Family and Marriage Research at Bowling Green State University.